Speak up. Up. Speak, speak up. Speak up. Speak up. 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 Speak, speak up. Up. Speak up. Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up. Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, October 27th, 2025. You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Magnus Tiewald. I'm one of your hosts for the hour. And
I'm Peter R.H.
And we've got a great show for you lined up today. We're going to start off with talking to some of the leadership of the Student Society here at Simon Fraser University. They have their big AGM coming up later this week, so they're going to tell us a bit about that. Danny Nesvadarani has an interview with Cornelia Naylor of a new nonprofit news group that's starting up here in, I guess, this sort of part of the Vancouver region, the Tri-Cities and Burnaby and that region. Last spring, all the local newspapers published by Glacier Media closed down quite suddenly, leaving very little news coverage for this area. Of course, CJSF has its reporters trying to do it, but it's more than we can do on our own, so we're really happy to see another group starting up that we can work with, and we're going to talk to them in about 7 or 8 minutes. We also have Gardening with Embark. And then, Peter, you're going to be talking about...
Well, there was a problem with supposedly Doug Ford doing the advertisements that had the Ronald Reagan speaking against tariffs. That was part of a radio address. I don't know if presidents still have this monthly or whatever it is radio address to the country.
Well, not Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's yapping most of the time anyway.
Well, yeah, he's got his Twitter. It's not Twitter, but his true social account.
It used to be, I think it was every week or every month. It'd be like a short 5 or 10 minutes. Yep. We're going to hear the complete 5 minutes from 1987. And there were tariffs placed on Japan, and we're going to put that into context. Anyway, so that'll come later.
Excellent. So all that and more coming up on this hour. Where we're starting off. Welcome, guys.
Hello. Good morning.
So maybe just quickly introduce yourselves.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Pranay. I'm the VP Internal Relations and Organizational Development for the Simon Fraser Student Society.
And yeah, I'm Landy. I'm the president of the Simon Fraser Student Society, and we're excited to be here today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming in. You guys have your annual general meeting coming up.
Yes.
So tell me a bit about that.
So yeah, we have our annual general meeting coming up on this Wednesday, October the 29th, 5:30 p.m., and it's going to be in the ballroom. So yeah, it is our biggest event of the year, and it is a chance for all the undergrads at SFU as members of the SFSS to come together, hear what we have achieved, and take part in shaping the direction of our society. And yeah, we have a lot of good changes that we are trying to bring for the students. Everyone is promoted to join.
Great. We'll talk about the changes you want to sort of bring forth, but why is it important for students to come? I mean, they are members of the society. They are paying fees to help to support the society.
Yeah, so I can cover that.
Yeah.
So it is worth coming because it's not only an event. It's a celebration of student voice,
right,
community. And apart from that, we are going to also be having free dinner and gifts like iPad and an AirPod. But more importantly, when you think about how engaged students are at SFU are and how... there's always this point coming up that, you know, SFU is a commuter school.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. It's event like these which help to shape how the engagement of the school is going to look like for the coming year. So that is why it's very important for all the students to come.
Excellent. So what kind of stuff are you bringing forth at the meeting?
Oh, okay. So some of the proposed changes, actually, I'll start with covering the biggest one. is that we are trying to increase the funding for student activities,
mm-hmm.
like club funding, student union funding, and other programming activities. We are trying to allocate a bigger lot to it, to be very exact, 30% to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this will lead and guide the leadership ahead of us to build on these laws and, right. and you know, help the students first, putting the students first.
So what sort of shape will that take? Will you be dedicating funds or creating new funds? How will that look?
I think so. It will be just dedicating the current mm-hmm. revenue funds. So, yeah. And it has been already sent to all the students in the proposed agenda. I highly encourage everyone to read that. But, that's how we are promoting students to... that's why we are promoting students to come right. to this meeting so that, you know, we can just give more to them.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not Go only ahead. That. Yeah, yeah. thanks. I think when we think about the meeting, it's a lot of putting sort of these bylaws and ideas in place mm-hmm. so that future student leaders can build on what we have built this year. I think it's a lot about financial responsibility and having a clear vision of how the budget should be spent, not only the year coming forward, but also years in the future to right. have a plan. And that's why it's so important for you to join us. We need 150 undergraduate students here on Wednesday. 250. Sorry, I meant to say 250 students here on Wednesday. We'll be providing dinner. We'll have amazing prizes. So please come out. It's between 5:30 to 8:30. Might run later, but you can also join us online.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like it's going to be kind of, obviously the important business, your motions and the other stuff that happens at a general meeting, which is quite serious, but you're also trying to make it a fun event.
Yeah. And that's why we are also having a CGSF karaoke right before our AGM.
Yeah, we're going to do that. CGSF is going to be up there hosting a karaoke session for about an hour before things get rolling. And that'll be fun, too.
Yeah.
Excellent. So once more, when is it happening?
Wednesday, 29th October, 5:30 p.m. at the ballroom. Or if you are not able to join us in person, you can also join online.
And come on out. There's going to be food, prizes, karaoke, and some important business.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, guys, for stopping in and telling us all about that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
and,
so much.
And good luck with the meeting this week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So if you're a student, just like voting in elections, it's important to turn out to these sort of events. They represent your society. The Student Society exists to represent you on campus, to the university and to the government, but also to create a fun place for you to do things while you're a student here at SFU, and that's why this building's here, and that's why they're having this meeting. So turn out this Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. in the ballroom, and do your bit and have some fun and get some food. All right, thanks to the guys for stopping in and telling us all about that. Now we have a story from Danny Nezvadirani. As I mentioned at the intro, we here in the eastern part of Vancouver, well, you know, throughout Canada, local news has really been suffering. And a lot of small publications, independent publications, and community publications have closed down or disappeared. And even bigger newsrooms from major news organizations are a lot smaller than they used to be. Here in our region, the Glacier Media shut down all its publications last spring, shutting down publications serving Burnaby, the Tri-Cities, New West, etc., leaving a big hole in community coverage in our area. But, you know, some of the reporters who worked for those papers are working at creating a new organization, and Danny sat down to talk to them last week.
This is Danny Nezvadirani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. In late April of this year, Lodestar Media, formerly known as Glacier Media, closed down three of its news publications, the Burnaby Now, the New Westminster Record, and the Tri-City News. The main reason given for the closures were budget constraints, but these closures also drastically decreased the level of local news available in the municipalities of Burnaby, New Westminster, Port Coquitlam, Coquitlam, and Port Moody. In June of this year, four journalists who previously worked with the closed Lodestar Media Publications banded together to start the Save Our Local News campaign. The campaign was created in collaboration with Media Workers Union Unifor, and after raising $55,000, a new publication, founded by veteran local journalists Mario Battelle, Janice Clue, Cornelia Naylor, and Teresa McManus, has finally launched. The publication is named Freshet News, and it serves to provide local news coverage to the communities of New Westminster, Burnaby, and the Tri-Cities. To learn more about Freshet News, what the plans are for this publication, and how they want to set themselves apart as a nonprofit newsroom, we sat down for a conversation with Cornelia Naylor, a longtime local journalist and co-founder of Freshet News. You know, this is a bit of a long time coming. I know that the Save Our Local News campaign was kind of going on all throughout the summer and resulted due to the closures of three Glacier Media, well, now Lodestar publications, the Burnaby Now, the New Westminster Record, and Tri-City News. Could you give a bit of a timeline of, you know, the layoffs happening, those publications closing, to you sort of banding together with these other journalists that were also part of the same publications and creating Freshet News?
First, I'm so impressed that you've been following this whole thing for as long as it's been going on. I mean, the timeline's been pretty short when you consider what we're trying to do, but yeah, it does feel like a big accomplishment to have launched our website last week. Okay, so timeline. I guess we would say that it starts back in 2023 when Glacier Media, now Lodestar, decided to close our print publications. And then after a couple of years after that, they shut us down completely, saying that for financial reasons, they said. And we think one of those financial reasons is that they left money on the table when they closed the print product. That's why we think that part is significant. So we found out in February that they were going to close us down, and the Burnaby Now shut down. Well, I guess we both did at the end of the Burnaby Now and New Westminster Record, and then the Tri-City News. We were on different collective agreements, so our closure agreements were slightly different, but I think we all shut our doors at the end of April.
At what point after the closure did you decide to band together with some of the other journalists that were part of those publications?
Well, we kind of just were set or reconciled to just kind of going our different ways, I think, and looking for other jobs, that kind of thing. But we were approached, we were thrown a lifeline by a co-op developer who approached us, various social medias and emails that he tried, and eventually we met with that organization, the Union Cooperative Initiative, and they said that they thought this would be an excellent idea or an excellent opportunity to create a co-op model to save local news in these three communities. And so that started shortly after the closures were announced, and then we didn't really start working on it in earnest until we were closed altogether with that organization.
I know throughout the summer you were out and about in the community at different events. What was the engagement process like? You know, what were some of the things you were hearing from people regarding, you know, the pretty distinct lack of local news that was occurring at the time?
Yeah, I would say our first few community events happened after a few weeks, maybe even a month after we shut down entirely. Our websites were gone. There was no more local news flowing. And people were really upset and really happy about the idea of us coming back. What we kept hearing over and over again is that people did not know what was going on in their communities. They didn't, just basic events, which kind of surprised me. I always thought that was kind of just a add-on in our news coverage and stuff, is just events listings, but people wanted that. Even though you can Google that stuff, I guess they wanted it in one place for their community. So that was one thing they missed. And the other thing was City Hall coverage, which I thought was really interesting too, because that at least is one of those things that doesn't really get a lot of clicks online, and it was something that was kind of not exactly that coverage wasn't exactly supported and encouraged from our corporate owner. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't generate a lot of clicks online.
Yeah, I mean, I think that ties into another question I had, which was just How is Fresh, you know, as a news cooperative, going to differ from the previous publications that you worked for? You know, is there going to be sort of a difference in the kind of stories you tell or the ways that you're telling it? You know, it's less profit driven. So in this case, do you have the time to sort of focus on the more niche hyper-local that may not get as many clicks?
Yeah. When I first started 15 years ago in local news, we were writing good, solid, sort of bread and butter local coverage, school board, city hall, the courts, lots of local news features and events, that kind of thing. And it's not that corporate media in the past with their local news outlets hasn't done that. They have done that. It's why people love and appreciate local news, even though they might have taken it for granted over these years. So I'd like us to go back to that kind of careful, you know, on the ground news coverage. And that's kind of what we expect to do, just basic, good local news coverage. The difference, I think, is that had been eroded by the time our newspapers closed. By that time, I was getting a little existentially angsty, and I think maybe my colleagues were too, about just becoming content creators. You know, it's just whatever bakery opening, not that bakery openings are not important, but just real clickbaity stuff that we were expected to just churn out, and lots of it. And I think with four journalists at the helm, because we are the ones making the decisions in this co-op, I think we're going to go back to, you know, we have to sort of slow ourselves down, get off the hamster wheel, and start doing that solid local news coverage again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're excited about that.
Yeah, and I mean, this has proven successful in other places. I remember the Save Our Local News campaign citing it, a similar thing happening in Quebec, and it and proving to be successful. I guess, how did that come about?
Well, yeah, that is kind of a model that we've looked for, at least a success story. So in Quebec, there were six daily newspapers, very much local news, but they were dailies. We were just free weekly papers. And they were going to all close because the corporate owner had the same sort of financial difficulties, I guess, that they ran into. So they were going to shut down six communities' news outlets. And the Quebec government, there was a big hue and cry. Politicians even got on board, I believe. But then the Quebec government stepped in with a $5 million, I think it was an interest-free loan or something like that, and they created a co-op, the same kind of co-op that we're looking at, a union cooperative, or where the members are union members as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going. Yeah, yeah, it's going now. That the shift to a co-op model saved those six papers. Our funding model, what we envision is that it will be advertising. We're looking at some sort of memberships, but we're still deciding what that means, membership or subscription. We don't expect that we will be putting up a paywall or that our paper will be something that you pay for, but maybe delivery to your home, like your front step, might be something that you pay for. Or certain content, certain parts of the content online might be things that we monetize. We're doing fundraising. We're right in the middle of another fundraising campaign. Our first fundraising campaign raised $55,000. So that's going to be important for us to continue campaigning and fundraising, basically. Since launching, we've also launched another fundraiser. And those are people really excited about local news actually flowing. And that was so encouraging for us. That, and we're looking at grants. We're looking at everything we can.
Mm-hmm. When can we expect the physical newspaper? If there's
any
news,
we haven't
that.
Even talked about that.
Yeah.
Well, our stretch goal is to have a print product right from the get-go. What we talked about was we think that people in the communities want print. We've talked to people in the ad industry, an ad agency, former ad sales people, and when they heard from their clients, their advertisers, they said they, you know, the company expected them to move over to digital advertising, and they didn't. Those advertisers just dropped off. So we think that there are a lot of people out there, especially in the community, that want people in their own community, the people that are going to come to their stores that they can advertise in print. Those are the people that are targeted with the paper. So, if we can manage to get enough support, if we can manage to monetize the website like the way that we need to, then hopefully our goal is to launch in the spring, to get a print publication out in the spring.
So the last couple questions I wanted to ask were, I guess, more personal ones, looking into the backgrounds of all the journalists involved within Fresh Air News. You're someone who's been involved within local journalism for quite a long time, 15 years or so?
And I'm the one who's been in local journalism the shortest time. Between us, we have like 100 years of local news coverage experience. One of my colleagues is, I think both, two of them are have 30 years of experience in local news. So
yeah.
Actually, I think all of them do, now that I think about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, like what keeps you here?
That's an excellent question. It is such a fun job. The variety of it, I mean, as a local journalist, you cover everything. I love animal stories. They're always so weird and quirky. You get to sit down and talk to people in your community, and life is both stranger and more beautiful than fiction when you talk to certain people in the community and you can really get into those stories. You know that the coverage that you're doing of civic institutions like City Hall or the school board or the courts really matters because nobody else is doing that coverage. They're you know, they swoop in if a story is really interesting. And in the past, that's how the bigger outlets have gotten some of their scoops and their stories, is that they follow up on local news reporting. And that's a thing that's eroding and is really important. But on a personal level, I just love it. I love being in the courts. I love, the people you get to meet. The dedication to craft, the storytelling itself, the variety. It's never done. You can never do it well enough, but it's always a great challenge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The publications closing earlier in April. Do you feel like you were always like acutely aware of the importance of local news, or was it something that like really put it into perspective for you once it was gone, essentially?
Yeah, that's a great question, because when you ask me personally, I've always loved this job. It wasn't like it's you don't know what you got till it's gone, in terms of my own personal enjoyment of the job. But since the papers closed and we've looked into why people are concerned about local news disappearing, and even the fact that it's disappearing at an alarming rate across Canada and North America and possibly the world, but definitely in Canada, has made us more aware of its importance societally. There were a couple of reports written earlier this year, or that came out earlier this year, that really underlined that. One of them said that when communities, it's data coming out of the States, that when communities lose their local newspaper, they tend to retreat into more partisan corners. And we've definitely seen that in the States and in Canada more and more. When you lose your local newspaper, people go online and they retreat into their ideological corners and just throw rocks at each other. And there's nothing that they can share, like a community news feature that can, at least they're in the same reality, you know, and fact-checking, and people that are dedicated, you know, professionals in terms of making sure that the facts that they put out can be trusted and that we've done the best we can to verify the things that we're saying. Those things are important so that people don't retreat and become more divided. And that, to me, is a really important concern in democracy today. The other thing was the idea, the other report said that local news is like the bedrock of good journalism, a good journalism ecosystem, and therefore really important for democracy. In for that same reason that I was talking about earlier, that we are on the ground in those communities covering things that other people don't. Those institutions that really affect people, like the bylaws and the decisions coming out of City Hall, what happens in their local schools, what happens, what their police force is doing, what their fire department's doing. We're there giving people the information they need to make informed decisions as informed citizens. And that's just key to democracy. Those are all things, to answer your question, those are all things that have become more and more front of mind for us, or even just, we've just realized them more, you know? Mm-hmm. We didn't realize how important we were. It's crazy to me that now you have a website, our website, and there would have been nothing had we not, you know, established it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to
even
your point. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, I mean, even the Burnaby Beacon recently, I think I had a merger with the Georgia Strait.
That's right.
It seems like a lot of it is either being dealt with in mergers or just straight up closures.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense. those were the questions I wanted to ask, but I guess the last thing I'd want to ask of you is if there's just any other information regarding Freshet News and the work that all of you are doing that you would like our listeners to know about.
Well, they can sign up for our newsletter. They can visit our website, freshetnews.ca. And what we really want to do with this publication, to answer part of another question that you asked earlier, how do we want to be different? We want to be more engaged in the community. We want to hear more from our readers. We want to be able to have community events or events where readers can come and meet us and we can talk about stuff and different ideas for engagement. We haven't quite nailed all of those down yet, but we do want to hear from you. We want to hear letters. We want news tips. Sign up, subscribe, visit us.
Sounds good. I mean, and for those of you listening, CJSF would also love news tips as well. So if you can send those over to both Freshet News and CJSF.ca, please do. All right. Thank you so much, Cornelia.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Once again, that was our interview with Cornelia Naylor, a local journalist, reporter, and co-founder of the newly launched publication Freshet News, which aims to provide coverage for the areas of Burnaby, New Westminster, and the Tri-Cities. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Georgia Harmer is riding high on community radio stations across the country, currently in the number 7 position, I think it is. Number 10 position on the National Campus Community Radio charts. She's a niece of Sarah Harmer, so I expect you'll probably see them out on tour together at some point in the future. But she's currently carving her own path. This is Take It On from her new album.
Than all this childish noise.